Welcome everybody to the latest edition of the Polish Guy Podcast.
It's the Polish Guy.
We have a Mono American of the Week.
Holy crap, that defense is good.
Let's get on to the lighter side of things.
Holy crap, that defense is good. They are who we thought they were.
They'll find a way to win a couple of games, and maybe they should.
All things sports.
And everything in between. Polish Guy Podcast.
Now, here's the Polish Guy.
Well, hello again. It's the Polish Guy here, welcoming you to the newest edition of the Polish Guy Podcast here on July 4th weekend, 2011. And you know what that time is. The time is now for my annual rip on what baseball does and make fun of Bud Selig more. And, you know, it's the All-Star break for baseball, so it's time for this annual report. Other things to talk about here, of course, we got a Mono American. Tried to get you out of here quickly so you can get back to shooting off fireworks and having a good old time, just like we're used to here in America. And want to start off first with just a quick overview. Of course, the evil empire did not reign. And people are, of course, talking about how much LeBron James shrinked at the under the lights, and most of America couldn't be happier for Dirk Nowitzki. Of course, just out today is a little interesting story about good old LeBron, is that behind-the-scenes account of what really went on with the decision last year, turns out that Jim Gray himself was one of the guys with the idea. And the funny thing is about the article is that it mentions a lot of these behind-the-scenes things and how they try to keep it quiet and basically blames the Greenwich Police Department for disclosing the location of the decision before the event, and how the management of the whole thing was not happy with how it got out, because now they couldn't trick the kids into believing they were just going to some regular Boys and Girls Club thing and then seeing LeBron James. The funniest thing about the article is these are the people that are interviewed are not LeBron James. These are guys that flew the plane, for one, or set up the plane flight, probably didn't even fly it, and other management people, but not from LeBron himself, or Jim Gray, or Maverick Carter, you know, all the people that mattered. And the funny thing is, at the end of the article, they complains that how LeBron was perceived on the whole thing, because he was perceived as a puppet, yet the people at the top of the strings of the marionettes are the ones interviewed for this. Kind of interesting when you think of it that way. So basically what you're saying is everything we thought about LeBron James is absolutely true. Speaking of LeBron James, his former team, they've made a couple of moves. They're obviously trying to change their team into a younger one. They did go with what was the safe route in a bad draft, which I argued, well, there's no such thing as a safe route in a bad draft, because a bad draft is a bad draft. So if you're going to do something that's perceived as risky, you might as well do that in a bad draft. Because of that, I would have gone big first, then small, simply because of scarcity of the position nowadays. How many really good centers are there around, 5, 6, that you consider cornerstones? And I would have gone for that sort of home run. Athletic guards, they can do a lot of things with the basketball. They're coming out at like six packs every draft. They're like just a conveyor belt of basically beer, and in the containers are point guards and shooting guards and all that. So if you want that, I thought you should have waited. Now, I would have gone big first. Derek Williams, Cantor, anybody else, it didn't matter to me. Because I would want to shoot for the home run to try to get the rare big man that can actually dominate a game. We all know that centers still mean something, even in this day and age. As long as they rebound, they can shoot a few free throws and get to the line. But Cavs didn't do that. They went what was the perceived safe route. They took the best athlete in the draft by most accounts. And then they took a rebounder, which I guess sets up a move because he's described as just a beast on the offensive boards. And Tristan Thompson, he's a guy that, you know, maybe he's the replacement for Anderson Varejao, one of the few trade ships they have. I don't see how they play on the court at the same time. So maybe there's another move coming with the Cavs, but of course now it doesn't look like basketball is going to have a season. So that's all up in the air, and of course they traded a power forward, and they traded for a shooting guard, which is probably the right move, getting Omar Crespi, the Israeli. So overall, it's hard to rip on the Cavs. Obviously this can work out really well for them. It's just, look, who am I? But it's not what I would have done, and it's simple numbers. It's scarcity of the position. It's the fact that this is the type of draft where if you're going to take a perceived risk, this would have been it. Some people described it as the least talented draft in 30 years. So, again, I would have gone big then small. You know, general then specific. You know, the old art term. But hard to rip on the Cavs. Another place that is fun to rip on, just brand new story, mind-boggling to me, came out just a couple of hours ago. I haven't even done the research on this, but I have to mention it because it's so ridiculous. And I just want to get to another point about America on this, is that for some reason, Nike has re-signed Mike Vick. And it's mind-boggling. This 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was, this guy is deemed abhorrent. It even came from Phil Knight himself had comments in the media about Mike Vick. Now, he had one good season. Apparently, there's no proof that he's still killing dogs, although we also don't have proof that he's not killing dogs. What he is doing is going to say is telling people it's bad to kill dogs. And he also can't ever own a dog. But, you know, that doesn't mean he's not building a new kennel. And again, my old theory on Michael Vick is that people that torture, just the simple idea of torture, is something that I do not... It's a thing common with sociopaths. It's a thing common with serial killers. I'm not calling Mike Vick a serial killer. Relax. What I am saying is this particular trait that he was guilty of, proven to be guilty of, and he's obviously done it several times in his life, he's able to torture an animal. The idea of someone being able to torture, whether it's other humans, whether it's something else, I don't think that's curable. He might be able to lay low, or his head may not tick to the left every single time he thinks about a dog, and he immediately thinks he has to kill it. It can be suppressed. But after 1 year, 1 year of this apparent suppression, 2 years, okay, 2 years of this apparent suppression, all of a sudden, it's okay. It's okay now. Everything is forgiven. Let's help get this guy out of debt, the debt that he put himself into. Let's give him an endorsement contract. Let's make this guy's life easy. When he did something terrible for so long. It's amazing. This is how you know we've got things backward in this country. Nike is willing to pay a good sum of money and forgive a guy after just 4 years of just torturing and killing animals. Yeah, animals aren't people, I get that. But again, think about, okay, here, I don't want to describe this. Look up rape stand. And Google rape stand. And then just let your mind wander a little bit about other things that had to be going on under his watch or he himself was guilty of. And then think about whether this guy is someone who ever deserves money just because of his name. And that's what endorsements are. It's making money off of your name. This name should be sullied, not on the football field, but it should be sullied off of the football field forever. It's not, apparently. But then, the backwards thing is, people have to now apologize in the media for saying things that are part of a comedy routine that would be crass or offensive to some people, but not all the people, and people get what they sign up for when you buy a ticket to a comedian. You got comedians like that apologizing for them doing their craft in some ways. Obviously, what people like Tracy Morgan did, yeah, over the top. Probably shouldn't have done that. But we also shouldn't have said anything about it. Anything at all. Because that was his free speech, as much as many people don't agree with it. So, things that shouldn't be apologized for are being apologized for. And then we're quick to forgive something like somebody like Michael Vick. It is mind-boggling. Just mind-boggling how backwards this thinking is. And I cannot wait to actually read what comes out in the press of what Nike has to say. So, without further ado, the next large portion of this podcast devoted to Major League Baseball and all the things that Bud Selig is responsible for. And, in the news, and maybe not reported even enough, is Los Angeles Dodgers. Turns out that Frank McCourt actually didn't have any cash. And it turns out that he really didn't have any cash this month because parking attendants' checks bounced a couple days ago. I would say that's a problem. Now, you might be asking, how does this relate to the other couple issues that I'm going to talk about today? Specifically, stupid things Bud Selig is responsible for. Well, being the commissioner of baseball, Bud Selig is the one who, in 2004, had approved the sale of the Dodgers to Mr. Frank McCourt. Even though it was reported in the media that most of his $400-plus million bid was with borrowed funds. Bud Selig had this a couple of things to say about it at the time. The sale was contingent upon him raising $30 million, whether through a partner or other real estate deals, within the next 2 years. That did not happen. What did Bud Selig do? He sold a Volvo. He did. I heard it. One of his dealerships sold a Volvo. He didn't do a thing. Didn't back up his words at all. Speaking of his words, his exact words in a letter to the other owners who were concerned about this deal at the time. Many of them were concerns. Bud Selig says, the background investigation from McCourt revealed no known problems or any other matter that raises a question as to his qualifications or suitability to own a major league club. By the way, Bud Selig is paid roughly Manny Ramirez the money that he made with the Dodgers to make these decisions for baseball. Now, one of their proudest franchises, the franchise that broke the color barrier, kind of a big deal. You might have noticed that if you ever go to a baseball game, the number 47 is kind of retired throughout all of baseball, and the Dodgers were responsible for that. I don't know. Seems like a big deal. Seems like the Yankees or like the Red Sox might be a team that you would want to protect, like the Cubs. Oh, wait, the Cubs went bankrupt in 2009 under Selig's watch as well. Very interesting. Ah, man. Seems like there's a little pattern going on here. Anyway, to get down to it, there was other things going on. Specifically, the Boston Globe had a quote about McCourt, and this is straight from a article by Jeff Passan, or Passan, I hope it's Passan, with Yahoo Sports, where the Boston Globe is quoted by Mr. Passan, that the Boston Globe said about McCourt that few in this town have talked the talk more and walked the walk less. Ouch. Ouch. That's pretty damning evidence, isn't it? Oh, by the way, was there no other interest in the Dodgers at the time? Because the common presumption is that, that there wasn't a great deal of interest in the Dodgers. I'll give you one name that I found in research. It's actually in that article as well. In other articles, it's easily found and verified. Malcolm Glazer. Malcolm Glazer. You might recognize him as, oh, I don't know, the owner of the team in the English Premier League that has the highest payroll in the league in the Manchester United, as well as owner of your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There's a couple of guys. In fact, there's a guy who's worth around $4 billion, who I'd never heard of. So I think his name was something Broad, actually. But, you know, when it comes down to it, there was other options available to Bud Selig and Major League Baseball. There was concerns about Frank McCourt. And Selig signed off on this deal. Apparently, there's been some sort of relationship between McCourt and Fox. Fox is who tried to bail out McCourt a couple weeks ago when Selig did a complete 180 reversal from all the other things that he said about him and said, no, no, we're not going to allow the TV deal to save you. And then bankruptcy was filed, checks bounce, it's now messy. Major League Baseball will probably win. And there will probably be a person lined up, ready to go, ready to buy this team, and really bail out Bud Selig on this. And I gotta say, that's pretty much a shame. It's just another ridiculous move by Selig. And let's get to the other couple of things that I wanted to mention. One of the things about baseball that's not understood by many of the people is that why the schedule is the way it is. I am a bit of a purist, but I'm more of a progressive purist, that I do believe that change is good for the game and that it does need to change, which is going to be my third point on all of this. But the schedule, the way it is now, absolutely is not an even playing field and not a quality judge of who the best teams are at the end of the season. The argument is that 162 games is enough to figure out who is the best team in baseball. Well, the unfortunate thing is, the way it's set up now, is that there's no real way to figure that out. You have frauds getting into the playoffs every single year, and you have them making the playoffs over teams that are probably would have a better record based on the situation. It's easy to point at Toronto and how they have to deal with the AL East. And maybe Toronto is as good as the Cardinals, but we'll never know. And the problem is that we have this new handy-dandy idea known as the balanced schedule. I guess the unbalanced schedule, I'm sorry. The unbalanced schedule means that each team plays their interdivisional opponents about 17, 18 times a year. They play other teams in their league outside of the division roughly 6 times a year. And then on top of that, you throw in 15 to 18 games of interleague play. 10% of the season is now decided on interleague play. you could have a very nice draw in interleague play like the Texas Rangers did last year. Texas basically won the division because they went 14-4 in interleague play last year. And they faced Cleveland. They faced the 12th, 13th, and 16th worst teams in the NL last year, including the Cubs, the Astros, and the Pirates. Other teams weren't as lucky. Other teams maybe had to face the NL East and face the Phillies. Meanwhile, the Reds made the playoffs last year. They went 49-30. 49-30 against their own division and were a game under, so under 500 against the rest of the entire league. Now, obviously they won their division. They were the best team in that division. But they could have been in a situation where they had a better record than someone else who played in a much more competitive division. The National League Central has had four teams every year that's been sorry for a long time. For a while, the Brewers were included in there. Up until this year, when the Pirates are actually above 500, the Pirates were the perennial team down there. The Cubs have been there the last couple of seasons, including this year. It is not a fair fight, and a whole season of baseball can be decided despite its length. It's decided how well you do, basically, in a week's worth of games. A good portion of the league, about half, little less than half, normally is within 7 games of the division winners throughout all of baseball. You include division winners, but again, there's another 8 or 9 teams every year. That's decided in 1 week of play. One hot week of play can decide whether or not you're in the playoffs or not. And when you don't have a balanced schedule, when you don't face all the teams all at the same time, that same amount of times, you don't have an even playing field. It's that simple. There's no science to it at all. It's that if you play sucky teams, you're going to have a better record. And if you play sucky teams, and again, NL Central, another good example, they have a full week's worth of games extra because they are the only 16 division in all baseball. So they have another 6 games extra than anybody else that are divisional games, and even less games outside of the division then. And then you waste 10% of the 10% of the season on interleague play. Interleague play, I'm okay with some of it. I'm not okay with 10% of the season going to things like Cards Orioles. I think baseball would be much better off with something very simple. Have a rivalry. Every team has a rivalry. Pick a rivalry from the other league. Play 6, maybe 9 games of interleague play, not 15 or 18. 6, maybe 9 games of interleague play. It'd have to be balanced a little, since there's only 14 teams in the American League and there's 16 teams in the National League. You'd have to, you know, some teams that have 6, some teams that have 9. You're not going to be able to prevent that. Interleague play is a good marketing tool for Major League Baseball. That's why I'm still okay with it. But then you would only have... You would have to keep that, and you'd have, you know, New York, you'd have the Yankees and Mets every year, you'd have the Indians and Reds every year, you'd have that sort of thing continuing on into perpetuity, and it'd still be a good draw because it's still a good rivalry. Rivalries don't stop drawing people to the ballpark. Are people in Boston and New York tired of playing each other? Do they not show up for those games? Of course they do. They show up for every single one of them. And they pack the houses to do it. You're telling me that that less interleague play utilizing rivalry matchups wouldn't still have the good bump in attendance that regular interleague play does? I'm going to do some more research. I really want to see what Cards Orioles did this week. I'm sure the numbers are mind-boggling, and that the gross domestic product of Baltimore can save can handle all the problems that Bunny Colvin is having in the New Amsterdam. Yeah, I'm sure that's what's happening. Oh wait, that was a TV show. Anyway, bad idea. Oh, and the person who changed, we used to have a balanced schedule, by the way. This is how it used to be before interleague play. Of course, the person who changed all that was Bud Selig. Way to go, Bud. You've now made it sure that the game that plays the most amount of games somehow isn't able to figure out a real level playing field. That's the whole idea, wasn't it? The idea is that you play so many games, it has to be a level playing field. Nope. You figured out how to make it an uneven playing field. Ridiculous. And then finally, my annual rant. My annual rant on baseball and instant replay. And how easy, just so easy, this is to fix. Right now, baseball has home run calls being reviewed. But Selig has gone on to say that there will definitely not be more replay in his tenure. Then, the fervor was so bad, they said, maybe I'll consider it. And then now basically saying, nah, not till I'm dead. You know, the problem with baseball, the problem with Selig, and the problem with old thinking is that there is no new thinking. Old boys clubs ruins the NCAA. It ruins basically all of ownership. And when you don't allow all of ownership, what I mean is like NFL owners too, NBA owners. These guys won't even let in Mark Cuban, who by all accounts is a great owner financially, strategic with strategy, and he's a self-made billionaire. I would say that he's a pretty bright guy, might have some good ideas. No. Too maverick. Too much in the open. Too public. We can't have that. This is why baseball is not going to be able to take advantage of football and basketball both not playing in the fall. Somehow they're going to screw it up. Why? They have this old way of thinking. And this old way of thinking, there's always a compromise. And one of the main old ways of thinking that you always hear is that we do not want to take the human element out of the game. Okay, fine. What I'm proposing doesn't do that at all. It allows the human element, but allows proper correction of the human element to make the game as pure as possible. And as right as possible. That's why football has instant replay. Yeah, sometimes it's an issue. Sometimes there's a lot of gray area. Very rarely. Now, baseball, again, another problem with baseball is that it takes too long. Batters step out too much. You don't see 2-hour, 25-minute games anymore. Umpires don't enforce the pitch clock rule. They normally allow all the step outs the batters do. And the concern here is that more replay means more stoppages. Well, there's about 10 minutes every game where there's some sort of argument going on or a pause in the game about a play that just happened. Often the manager gets kicked out of the game because he says magic words. Once he comes out, kicks a base, throws a base, throws his hat, bumps the umpires, spits on his wife, whatever. This would eliminate and create jobs. Baseball is supposed to be under the most profitable time in its history. Something that Selig always triumphs himself about. Always toots his own horn about, says, in my tenure since the strike, even though that was one of the worst things ever to happen because took about 100 years for a World Series not to be played, and it was because, you know, and Bud Selig was a part of that, too. Don't ever forget that. So, Instant Replay says, no, it's not extended. Very simple ways to extend it and make the game better, and it'll get rid of about 90% of the arguments that exist in baseball. The other 10% is arguing balls and strikes that won't ever change, and umpires can throw guys out for doing that. Very simple. There's 16 crews of umpires in Major League Baseball. 15 on, 1 off, an emergency crew in case something happens. 4 members of a crew. I say there should be 5 member crews. What does that 5th member do? And of course this would rotate. That 5th member, he sits in a booth, he watches tape of the game. There's enough TV angles, especially since Major League Baseball owns all those angles through their MLB network. Have you ever seen those dugout cameras? Those are owned by baseball. That is why the MLB network can show you anything at once. Because they own it. They already have them. You hire another guy. You know, the baseball, I forget the, if it's 7 years or 10 years, that baseball umpires, once they go to umpiring school and start going through the minors, if they don't make it through all the way to the major leagues, and I forget if it's 7, 10 years, might be 12 even, there's a limit on how many years you can be a minor league baseball umpire before you're cut off, and you'd have to start all over again. You don't think that it might be a good idea for all those umpires that are complaining about taking the human element out of the game with instant replay? You don't think they'd be happy with about $1.5 million worth of new jobs? And that's only, are you kidding me? Maybe $2.5 million worth of new jobs? You get a 5th guy, you put him in a booth, his job is to watch the game. Watch the game. Watch the plays. Let him watch safe and out calls, fair foul calls, the homer, non-homer calls. Just let him watch all those. Let the umpires on the field call whatever they want. Human element. Let them do whatever they want. The home plate umpire, the crew chief, for that day, has a buzzer. It could be as simple as an old school beeper. There is a button in that booth that sets off that beeper. If there is a call made, and it is caught, and it only takes 10 or 15 seconds to do this, which is how long it takes for the next batter to come up, or the argument to start, or whatever. If the call is wrong, the buzzer gets hit, home plate umpire, he knows what just happened. That buzzer means you were wrong, it's the opposite way. You grab that runner, you throw him back on second base, there is no argument. That's it. That is it. How do you monitor the umpires? Well, there's tape of the game. So the guy with the autonomy in the booth, can be reviewed at all times by who? Everyone else, including Major League Baseball, who owns the feed rights to what he's watching. So simple. So easy. Such a little drop in the bucket money-wise. Keeps the human element in the game, and you might just shave off 10 or 15 minutes of all games and still have instant replay and get things right and still have the human element. But no. Old crony way of thinking. Stupid way of thinking. So let's sum it up. What have we done today? We have proven that Bud Selig can't pick owners, can't think forward, can't get his league on an even playing field, and can't embrace technology enough or come up with a good compromise for instant replay. He gets $20 million a year for this, approximately. Manny Ramirez money. I would say that we've got a problem. They finally did something very good, though. I will say this. With the All-Star game, the Home Run Derby, there's 2 captains picked, and they can pick anybody, even non-All-Stars, for the Home Run Derby. So it's like going in the backyard again, back of the schoolyard and picking teams. And I gotta say, I love that. That was a good move. Whoever had that, but if it's you, congrats, you did something right. But a home run derby isn't even anything that affects the game officially on the field. It's just a marking an event. So I'm going to guess that Bud didn't come up with it. I'm just going to guess that. I'm going to guess that it was a new way of marketing guy. Hopefully there's plenty more of those, and hopefully some of them have Bud's ears. Mile American, we're going to get you out of here quickly this week. Again, what can I say? It's a low time of the year. Not much is going on. There's no football. There's not going to be any basketball. We're going to be able to talk about college football is going to be coming on the website. We've got the answer for we got the first couple of volleys going. We're going to be posting that up. If you missed the ESPN article, honestly, it's probably the best thing I've ever written. I swear to God that it was edited by a friend, but I did come up with that article, and pretty amazing. The grammar still sucks. That's how you know it's me. But special Model American, it was. It's going to be a state. One specific guy, though, in the state, I found a lot of juicy stuff. Adam Carolla has a little segment on his show called Germany or Florida, where you take the craziest news story you can find and get one from either Germany or Florida, and then you have to guess. Well, man, I should have done this a long time ago for Model Americans. So the Model American of the Week is the state of Florida. This is just one story. Another story I found featured a ring of about 60 prostitutes in Winter Haven, Florida, which, by the way, is right where a lot of spring training is held in the spring. So, anyway, this Model American of the Week is James Ashley Hulgan, Hulgan. He's the general manager of Briarwood Presbyterian Church, their radio station. What he did was he drove nude, apparently looking for a nude. I guess he couldn't wait to get there. Then he decides to... He gets lost or something. And then he decides to ask for directions to said nude beach. People he chose to ask were a 23-year-old and a 15-year-old girl. Two girls. 23 and 15. Okay, here's some tips to all you people going out there. If you are nudist beach guy, which I do have to have some I have other questions for you if you are nudist beach guy. First, you're in Florida, dude. Not a ton of them out there. In fact, I don't know of any, but whatever. If they exist, they exist. Great. Get your directions down. As a general manager of a radio station runs a lot of their music off of computers nowadays in the iPod generation. So they have computers, which I assume have connections to the internet. The internet will probably tell you the address of the nude beach you want to go to. That's the first step. Probably should get the address down, print out a MapQuest. Your radio station, I know a lot of radio stations are poor. Maybe you got to pay 10 cents per page for those copies. But you know what? The weight of 20 cents compared to having to go door-to-door and notifying the neighborhood that you're going to be moving there, I think it's a fair trade-off. I think that's a fair deal. I think the 20 cents is worth the level 2 or whatever level sex offender he... I don't know what this qualifies for. That's the first step if you're go-to-nude beach guy. Second step if you're go-to-nude... See, this is a learning... The Model American is always a learning curve. You know, again, athletes, if you want to smoke weed in the house. Don't take it in the car with you. Smoke... rip bong loads till you can't even move, and the fat chick looks good. But don't take it in the car. If you're nude as a beach guy, wait till you're at the beach to get nude. Don't drive there nude. Bad idea. Okay, and if you do drive there nude, I do assume that you have a towel. You are going to a beach, after all. Maybe you won't get into the water all the way, but you sweat. It's sunny. You're probably going to sweat, so you're going to need a towel. Take said towel. You know, wrap it around you like a little skirt or whatever you want to do, because, you know, you are nudist beach guy. Therefore, if you are asking directions, at least you got something on you. Then you're just a weird shirtless old man. So at least you're just creepy old man and not lewd sex offender dude. You know, you went from nudist beach guy and jumped all the way to sex offender dude. Because you didn't follow these simple steps. Again, if you go on this beach, find out where it is. Get directions. Use towel wisely in car. So again, Mr. Hogan, you bad move. Model American of the Week. You can only find this stuff in Florida. In fact, if you just want to have a laugh, just Google Florida news. You're going to find a prostitution ring. You're going to find... you can't make this stuff up. It's amazing. So there you go. There's your Model American of the Week. And just thank you for listening again. Next podcast, going to be a very special podcast. We're going to have a guest for the first time on this podcast, a new guest, and we are going to go juvenile Bill Simmons style, where we're going to talk about, yes, the Rivals, the new Real World World Rules Challenge, and we're going to dissect it. It's a special podcast coming up in a couple of weeks. The Rivals, be sure to tune in. We will have all the bases covered on that. Covered much better than Bud Selig covers the bases in his own game that has bases. So again, thank you for listening to the Polish Guy Podcast. Have a wonderful 4th of July. Take care. Thank you.